Welcome to MGO HockeyCast 2.1. 2.1, we've made it to a second full season. I remember when we were doing the first one, and now here we are as a MGO blog staple. So I'm walking into the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor downtown, to record this podcast, and I open the door, and I could not believe who was sitting across the table with the stuff already set out.
Hello, Dave.
Anthony, I thought you were gone. Did you decide to grace us with your presence for maybe for one more preview?
I really love doing this podcast with you. That's the truth. And honestly, I'm just so happy that hockey is back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you've been listening to other podcasts, it hasn't been the most upbeat thing to talk about in other sports. But we might have a few things for you in hockey, given maybe Sunday's crazy game. The last couple of years have been slightly different for Michigan. They had a coaching change for the first time in, well, my lifetime. Maybe yours.
I think so.
Were you born? I was a young lad.
I was a young lad.
And the first
Dated
year went
myself a little here.
The first year went really well. Michigan earned their way to a Frozen Four appearance. They had to go out east and knock off BU and one other team that I'm blanking on here,
but Northeastern.
Northeastern, which it, basically road games, and made it to St. Paul. Didn't go well there, but. It was a good season, I think, and a springboard. And then last year, they kind of crashed back to earth a little bit. Goaltending was a little iffy. Defense, a little iffy. Didn't have a lot of scoring. Special teams left a little bit to be desired. But now they return mostly the core of that team, aside from sort of the superstars.
Yeah, and I think that'll be the biggest challenge for them is they're losing basically their top three defensemen. And their two best forwards, although Josh Norris didn't play half the season, so
right.
It won't be, that loss won't be felt as much. But there's still, I mean, 4.5 players are gone, and they were probably 4.5 core players. So it is a little bit of a challenge.
But they do bring back a couple of full lines that at times last year kind of sparked them. And I thought they used, especially that fourth line, pretty well. That whole line is back. Pastyovs and Becker are back. They have a couple of exciting freshmen. And then they even get Lockwood, who we were uncertain about at the end of the year, if he was returning or not. He decided to come back with his pal Slaker, who they've been playing together now for, this will be their fourth year together.
Yeah, they got a big break when Will Lockwood decided to come back because he was excellent last year. And with Jake Slaker, that's, you know, 2/3 of a top line that is still intact. So I think that will probably be what carries the day early on. And they're pretty fortunate to have that because there's going to be some growing pains in some other areas.
So Michigan has already had their exhibition. We thought about maybe doing this podcast before the exhibition, but I think that being able to see them a little bit and then talk about it before the season actually kicks off this weekend might be give us a better gauge of certain things. And so you went to the game. I did not make it to the game. I looked at some of the highlights, some of the stats, but you made it to the game on Sunday and had a few interesting takeaways.
Yeah, it was quite the blowout. Now,
well, Windsor, from what I heard, Windsor's not the best.
So to understand the way the Canadian like colleges work, long story short, any team west of Toronto kind of isn't trying. So the major juniors for about the last 10 years have been pretty serious about education packages. So any junior player that ages out can go to college and play 4 years and they play for their university team. And they, you know, it's a good gig for those kids now. And a lot of schools out east and out west are actually doing, you know, pretty well. Duluth lost to University of Alberta on Saturday.
Oh,
right. Yeah. So, and Alberta basically was made up of entirely of former CHL players, like guys who were decent that weren't good enough to go pro. Windsor had one such player in that sense. One player of any consequence. They had a couple others that had like played real full seasons in the OHL. And then the other 16 or 17 people that dressed were all tier 2 and tier 3 players. So, I mean, to a man, like not one of these outside of those three players I mentioned, Not one of them, not one of the other players could keep up with any Michigan player. It was a complete mismatch. Shots were 35-5 halfway through the game.
So my first takeaway, because I went to a couple games last year that were less than desirable to watch.
Right.
But it's nice to see them sort of like what Michigan football did against Rutgers. You wanted to see them come out and pound a team that they should pound.
Uh-huh.
And Michigan took it to Windsor. And even though there aren't how good is this team takeaways, you got to see at least a baseline of, okay, they at least did what they needed to do to that team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could have gone to a practice and watched them run 5-on-0 drills because it's basically what was happening. The only player on Windsor that was of any consequence, Anthony Salinitri, who played for Sarnia and Oshawa in the OHL, was actually traded, was one of the better overagers in the league last year. He was the only player that could actually do anything. I think he did pretty well defensively against the Michigan players, but he was in this position where every time he would make a play, he would just be passing to nobody. And the frustration was very obvious about halfway through the game. And like I said, everybody else was just out there for the fans' enjoyment, pretty much. The only thing that kind of concerned me was the goalie that they had did not have to make a ton of huge saves, made enough, but 35-5 in the second period, and I think goals were 2 or 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was not the goalie standing on its head. It was more Michigan putting a bunch of pucks into chests.
Okay.
And so that was a little bit of concern to me. That would probably be my only negative takeaway from the game.
Mm-hmm.
The positive takeaway from the game is the biggest thing that stood out to me is no matter how ugly the game got out of hand in terms of, because it was mostly clean. I mean, there's a little bit of chippiness here and there. But I mean, in terms of a big blowout, it wasn't that bad. The thing that really positively went for me was Michigan didn't really get sloppy. So in a game like that, you tend to break down, you can't tend to get lazy. And Michigan didn't. I mean, after the midway point of the game, shots were not totally even, but I mean, it looked like more of a hockey game. I mean, mm-hmm. Michigan definitely took their foot off the gas, but they weren't breaking down. They weren't breaking their system. They weren't being pretty, they weren't poor in any sense in that sense.
Gross
sense,
turnovers and misassignment type stuff.
I mean, the first Windsor goal was a Cam York turnover behind the net.
Yeah.
On a forecheck he shouldn't have played himself into. But it's shots are 35-5 at that point. So it's there's not a ton of takeaways. The highlights are nice. The two York goals were beautiful. The one that everybody's seen where he receives the pass and pulls it between his legs is nice. But there was also a really excellent one on a 4-on-4 where they cycled him down low and he tipped a shot as he was cutting through the crease. So those are really nice. I think there was quite a lot of other action from freshmen. I think Hayhurst got on the board. I think Pearson got on the board.
The Pearson goal. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty good overall. There was a lot of ice time. Looking at the lines, though, as you mentioned, the one thing that stood out to me is that Orval and Ciccolini were Ciccolini didn't dress, and Orval was either the 14th or 15th forward, as should be. And we'll get into the freshmen in a moment. But that to me means that they're basically going to fill the three spots they lost last year, or two really, by the end of the season. The two spots they lost last year with Hayhurst, Beecher. And that would be it. So you're really looking to fill those, Hayhurst and Beecher are looking to be the guys that step in.
So in that sense, we've already talked about a lot of these guys for the last year or more.
Mm-hmm.
But they started with Hayhurst on the top line mm-hmm. between Slaker and Lockwood.
Mm-hmm.
And that was maybe not where you would put him, or?
Jacob Hayhurst is 5'8 grad transfer from RPI.
Yeah.
He actually had played with Orval when Orval was a freshman.
Okay.
There's a couple highlights floating around out there of them on the power play together. He is fifth year, like I said, played between Lockwood and Slaker. And to me, it wasn't about not him being, a good spot for him, but I feel like Beecher would be a really good spot for that.
Oh, okay. So you're saying it would be better fit for Beecher.
Yes, yes. And I they did play a couple shifts together later in the game. I believe it was power play.
Yeah, I could see them doing that on the power play.
Right. And the reason for that is, and I wrote about this about a month and a half ago after the World Junior Summer Showcase in Plymouth, where Beecher is a little bit raw from a puck possession and puck skill standpoint. He's a very large freshman, 6'3", every bit of 210, I would imagine. Even at the World Junior level, he's a bowling ball. So in the college game, he's going to be very effective doing that. you want him to have play drivers with him, and Jake Slaker and Will Lockwood are going to be the two best play drivers on the team right. this year. Aside from Quinn Hughes, they were last year. So putting Beecher between those two, he won't have to participate, between basically the top of the defensive zone and through the neutral zone. And then he'll be able to be very effective, basically below the hash marks.
So
in
sort
the
of
offensive zone,
power forward ish.
Yes, and even as a center, because he's good on draws and he's pretty good defensively, even for being so raw. Like, I think that was kind of where I was hoping. I wouldn't say expecting. I didn't really know what to expect, but I think maybe at some point in the season we'll see that. But yeah, it's. That was the only really new thing. And then they had Beecher between Becker and Pastioff, or Michael Pastioff. The thing about Beecher and Becker being together is they're both kind of the same skill set. And so
yeah. That
line's going to be a lot of chip
and dump and
right,
like
without a real puck mover. And so I'm hoping they'll make that switch. I don't really know Hayhurst's tendencies or skill set at all, really. Like,
we've seen one game.
Right. So I don't know if he's real capable of driving the play through the defensive and neutral zone. I'm sure they'll have a better feel of that. It was interesting that Luke Morgan was also like the fifth center for the game. And like I said, Emil Orval was a fifth winger. Didn't really get a ton of looks at either one of them. I don't think they really had a ton of ice time compared to the regulars. But the other lines were Olmstead, Nick Pastioff, and Jimmy Lambert.
Lambert, yeah.
And then, as you mentioned before, the Raby, Van Wy, and Moyle line were still together.
So the Raby, Van Wy, and Moyle line, to me, like, they were a great fourth line last year.
Yes.
I think that they could probably be a decent third line.
Yeah, it's
fine. As they kind of grow
right.
and get older yeah. and play together more.
Right. Well, on a team that's 30th in pairwise, they're probably a second or third line, which is what their usage was last year. Let's be honest. I mean,
yeah. No, you're right.
On a team that's looking to be, a two or a three seed is probably their ceiling. They're going to be more of a complementary piece and
yeah.
win a lot of those matchups down lineup. So I think that, ultimately, if Michigan's going to be successful this year, they're going to have to find a line or two better than them, to be honest. But,
yeah.
Not to say they're bad, because they're quite effective together. But you're going to want to win those matchups down lineup. They're probably you're not going to want a lot of offensive zone draws with that line out there, like we saw a little bit last year.
Yeah.
You're going to want to shift that to a little bit of a defensive thing, and they're pretty effective for what they are. And so this is not a knock. But it's in terms of trying to generate more offense and effective offense. We don't want 35 shots going into the goalie's chest, right?
And so if they can get up to that third line, Michigan has some players who popped at times last year that they can move up, maybe if they take another jump to that second line. Mm-hmm. Guys like Jimmy Lambert, Nick Pastioff is a senior. He's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. His brother has caught fire at times, too.
Definitely.
And then Jack Becker. Mm-hmm. So there are candidates there, mm-hmm. Guys who have played for Mel for a couple years now and mm-hmm. who have had, I thought Lambert really kind of came into his own a little bit towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Michigan didn't have a lot of scoring aside from their top line, but Lambert was played there and was played on the power play a little bit, only ended up with 4 goals, but I think most of his 13 points came, I would say, at the end of the last year, or at least the second half.
Towards the end of the season, and a few on the power play, I believe,
He had a couple nice snipes.
Remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I'm not totally sure what to make of this. I tried to reference their exhibition last year, but they actually opened with Vermont before they played the Canadian school.
Yeah, that was so weird.
So it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell how much of this is a dress rehearsal, but to me, because the lines are very similar to last year, I think it's largely going to be the same. When I was trying to figure out how they were going to make large gains from last season, I was thinking about, are they going to be able to make another line out of the new players? And it's looking like they're probably not. They're going to, the new players are going to fill in. Maybe Orval will turn into something, like maybe he'll work his way into the lineup, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of opportunity. It seems like seniority rules in this case.
Yeah. And I think that's not the worst thing, because you are transitioning from a lot of freshmen, sophomores to now sophomore juniors. And in mm-hmm. a couple ways, some seniors. And so while the players don't change, they do get older. And part of what we've seen mm-hmm. around college hockey is when you start getting a bunch of 22, 23-year-olds mm-hmm. who've been playing together for a while, you can have those good years, mm-hmm. especially offensively or even defensively if now they start to learn the system.
Yes, I agree completely with that. But where the gains needed to be made, to me, were better puck possession, especially transitionally, Fewer turnovers from the forwards, putting defense right. and goalie into bad spots.
Right.
And if you're rolling the same lines back out there and rolling, 93% of the same players back out there, or not that many, but like 80% of the same players back out there.
A very high percentage.
Right. What are you, where's those gains? And so you're hoping that all of the players and the system itself makes a jump in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking maybe they'll have an extra, a new line. This will shift the way, shift matchups. I think the perspective is going to have to be, are they all going to take better care of the puck? Is the system going to improve? Are they going to have curveballs when they're forechecked really hard?
Yeah.
Are they going to be able to make adjustments on the fly? They didn't really do a ton of that last year. I mean, they played pretty static. They played their game. This is third year. Teams are going to know what's up. They're already been scouted in the Big Ten. All these teams have played against a Mel coach team at least 8 times, right?
Right.
So we're going to see where that goes.
Well, part of puck possession is definitely defense.
Yes.
And we've talked about...
That's a good analytic mindset, David. All right.
This is what you do. You track this stuff.
Love it.
But we've talked about all the forwards. Did you want to get anything in on Cicchellini? I know he wasn't...
I don't know.
He was scratched.
So, yeah, I guess maybe we should go through the freshmen.
We've touched on most of them.
Yeah, but Beecher, Cicchellini, we have not talked about. Hayhurst, we talk a lot as a new incomer. Orval was a high scorer in the USHL as an overager.
And he came from RPI 2, went back to juniors.
Yeah, did an overage year in the USHL and then came to Michigan. The only one we haven't talked about is Cicchellini. He played in the OJHL, which is the second tier in Canadian juniors in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
There is another league in Ontario, basically Western Ontario, called the GOJHL, which is coincidentally where most of the Windsor players came from. So it's the third tier of Ontario juniors. But he tore it up, and it was kind of unprecedented for someone of his age. So basically a 17-year-old player to score that much. I don't know if he led the league, but he's close to the top. Like I said, it's very unusual. Normally this would mean, he would be on a good track for a lot of production. It was a little bit, I hope there's not an injury there. I guess for his sake, we don't know if he's injured or not. It's a little bit puzzling that he didn't play.
Hmm.
So even dress for a dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means they don't rate him or there is an injury. So we won't know.
Well, they do have guys. Mm-hmm. So it's not
he was
like,
drafted by the Rangers in the 7th round also. So they did bring, he was one of the 3 drafted players they brought in.
Well, you would think that if a guy was drafted, he would eventually get a shot. You would hope. Maybe not, but...
I mean, there's precedence for not really. Not drafted, but, fringe, 7th round is fringe, and we saw that with Jack Randall last year, where he, I think, played one game on a scoring line all of last year.
And the interesting thing is Michigan is bringing in guys like Hayhurst and Orval, who are not freshmen. They are new players to the team, but they have played not only college hockey before, but have played multiple years.
I think what we're seeing as a key theme under Mel is older.
And that's... I think even bigger than Mel. It is under Mel, but it's also, that's for the most part, unless you're BU, maybe Duluth nowadays, it's just kind of where college hockey is.
I mean, I think Minnesota brought in a lot of young players.
Okay.
Wisconsin has brought in a lot of young players. So
yeah.
I think it's access to talent as well, like recruiting. And so, it's neither a good or a bad. One of the things we expected under Mel was a return to high level recruiting, so to speak, where it's not unusual to bring in 3 or 4 highly rated players a year. And I think that maybe they're not quite doing that as much, although they brought in 2 freshmen that were first rounders. This year they have 2 of the 11 first round players in the NCAA.
That's crazy.
12 actually, if you count the kid from Wisconsin who's going to be drafted this year.
Okay.
Got the A rating from Central Scouting.
Okay.
So there are technically 12 first rounders playing in the NCAA this year.
And they have 1/6 of them.
Yes. And last year they had 2 of the 11 as well.
So
it's good. But I think, you're not seeing a ton of 2nd, 3rd, and 4th rounders.
Yeah, that's...
And in place of those, and we've talked about the changing landscapes of college hockey, you're seeing older players.
Yeah.
So you get outside the 2nd and 3rd round, and those 4th through 7th rounders, and even some undrafteds, there's not a ton of difference, to be honest. A lot of it is team preference as you're going through the draft at that point.
Fit on a roster.
And, guys flying under the radar,
right.
So to speak. And so those players are being kind of passed over for older players. And so it's a little bit of the Michigan Tech playbook there. So we were expecting a younger, high-flying, you know, North Dakota, Boston University. I think that's kind of what everybody thought we were getting back into, and it's really kind of a hybrid of those two approaches where it's a little bit of the Michigan Tech playbook you know, some of the, can we get guys off the NDP, you know, because Michigan's always going to get one or two, right?
Can we get those guys, and then will they even stick?
Right, but they're doing it. I mean, pretty much, they're getting the guys off the NDP. They have a couple, I think, slated for next year and the year after. I mean, it's always going to be at least one or two.
Yep.
But I think what we're going to end up seeing is the fourth through seventh round, as we're talking about, are going to be the older, are going to be replaced by the older players. I mean, I think next year the only player they have due to come in is a B grade, or was it a C grade? So it's, I mean, it's, I think we're going to be looking at some older players in that sense where, like I said, we were expecting, you know, some young guys to come and step in, and there's going to be old grad transfers, and there's going to be some overagers.
Speaking of young guys that we were expecting, Michigan had one of their greatest young guys who probably ever put on a hockey uniform for Michigan leave after last year in Quinn Hughes, who was, well, pretty much anything you want in a college hockey game in one player, where he could score goals by himself, he could find other people, he could give away goals. It was a must-see experience whenever he was on the ice.
Yeah, Quinn Hughes, and honestly, if you look at what he's done in the NHL, probably the most talented player, I would say.
I mean, he did some things that, because I mean, I've been watching since probably 03, 04.
Right. And if he's 6'2", like, he's going to go first or second overall that year. Right?
Yeah.
You know, top three. And Jack Johnson, I think, is their highest ever drafted player.
He was number three, I think.
Right. So you can have a real conversation about Quinn being the most talented player that's ever played at Michigan. And if you look what he's doing with the Canucks right now, it's a reasonable conversation. Now they lose him.
Right.
And out the door with that goes, as you said, the good and the bad, the frustrations, but as well as like the spectacular plays, a lot of play driving through the...
A fourth forward most
through
of the
defensive
time.
In the neutral zone, a lot of creativity in the offensive zone, a lot of possession maintaining plays. A zone exit wizard. You know, basically, he was extremely high on zone exits. He's really good on zone entries, but basically a one-man breakout, and he's a one-man breakout in the NHL. So to lose that is it's a huge hole.
But
they are getting Cam York, 14th pick, I believe, to Philadelphia. He was an NDP player. He looked really good on Saturday, on Sunday. In my other viewings of him, both in the Worlds and at the World Junior Summer Showcase, I thought maybe it was going to be a little bit raw on the defensive side, a little bit raw on the transition side. Not raw at all on
really?
The offensive side. Oh, he's fully, I mean, he's ready to go offensively from a power play perspective, from a cycling perspective. As we talked about, the goal he scored, both goals he scored were really nice ways to jump into the rush in two completely different manners. I think you will see, you know, basically from day one, an ability to contribute offensively. It's hard to say where it's going to be defensively. The thing that troubled me about the World Junior Summer Showcase is, he really was sheltered, number one, in that situation, which is not totally unusual for a draft player because he's playing a little bit down in terms of age, but didn't really move the puck all that well through the defensive and neutral zone unless it was a power play and he was basically breaking the puck out.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that's going to translate given the integration into Michigan system. We'll have to wait and see on that. And I think that some of the growing pains might be Michigan is going to get pinned in a little bit more into their zone where Quinn Hughes can't rescue them. York won't be able to in that sense. We will also probably see if the other coaches are intelligent, probably a heavily forechecked Michigan team. You know, because not only have they lost Quinn Hughes, and we're talking about what else they've lost, they lost Nick Boca and Ciccolini or
Ciccone. Who both were seniors, four-year players, both had their frustrations at times at Michigan, but were also sort of a calming presence when they were on the ice.
So Ciccone is a player I think was underappreciated. He was the yin to Quinn Hughes Yang, so to speak.
And they always and they were paired together basically for 2 years.
Yeah, and Ciccone was really good defensively at the end of the day. He was very good with the puck. He did not turn the puck over a whole lot. He was a nice calming presence. Now he probably didn't skate as well as a Quinn Hughes partner needs to, especially in the freelancing environment of college hockey, where Quinn is going to have a lot more freedom, you know, than say he will in the NHL. He's
sure.
going to have to play within more of a structure.
Sure.
Given Michigan's problems moving the puck through the zones, I would think that, you know, Quinn Hughes moving the puck is a little bit more welcome. I know there's a little bit of debate about, you know, he turns the puck over a lot, blah, blah, blah. I don't really think he turned the puck over as much as people think, especially when you compare it on a per-minute basis, when you consider the matchups and when you consider how much is asked of him.
I think the things that happened were some of his turnovers were just pretty bad. And they like the Penn State mm-hmm. game where he just kind of gave away a couple goals.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think that that is sort of the volume uh-huh. as much as it is the context.
Yeah, and I mean, we can get into that in the hot take section, because I'm not saying that's a hot take, but I think that it kind of goes into the way people approach the evaluation. And with the movement towards a very mobile puck moving defenseman, you know, movement, I wouldn't say completely positionless hockey, but, you know, those guys who can skate that can play D.
Right.
You see it at all levels. You see it with Brett Burns. You see it with Eric Karlsson. You see it in the major. You see it in major juniors more than college, frankly.
I mean, that was Cale Makar, right? Like, that's what
he
did
right.
for, you know, UMass for, essentially for UMass. Last year.
I mean, you see it every year. There's two or three kids in major junior, and that's just those are the things you have to accept, because for every game that Quinn Hughes gives away to on the blue line, leading to breakaways, Quinn Hughes is getting, you know, 70% or 80% zone exit rate.
Yeah.
He is single-handedly breaking the puck out. He is single-handedly breaking the puck in. He is making beautiful cross-ice passes that no one else on the other team can make. So you have to balance it with what he brings to the table. You know, being the defenseman and being the last man back, you have kind of the same responsibility as the goalie. If the goalie has a rough day, you know, everyone notices, right? No, honestly, like,
you're
exactly
right.
What it is. And
people criticize quarterbacks, they criticize goalies, and they criticize pitchers.
Right, and so people have to think about that way with a puck-moving defenseman, and I don't think the mindset has kind of caught up with that, right? I mean, Eric Karlsson, the best right-handed defenseman who's ever lived, gets criticized for those kind of things.
So would you say that Cam York is a little bit more of a stable replacement? You're not going to get the fireworks on maybe either end, but you're going to kind of get the polish?
Yeah, especially offensively. Like I said, defensively, the technique looks to be there. I'm not sure. I think it might be a little bit rough early on. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think it's a situation where, you know, even Kendry Miller, you know,
who we saw last year.
Yeah, looked raw until Christmas, right? Yeah. And now he's completely dominant. I think it's going to be a situation where it's going to be Christmas time before, you know, Cam York takes off. Not a criticism. It's a little bit different than Beecher. If you compare the two first-round picks, Beecher's body is fully mature, and his skill set lends itself to being effective right away if put in the right positions.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cam York, because they lost their top three defensemen, it's going to be Cam York. In this game, it was
Luke Martin.
Luke Martin. I saw him out there a little bit with Blankenberg as well. So he did take some shifts with Blankenberg. I think there was a little bit of experimentation there. But you're breaking in three new top three defensemen.
Yep.
Not a sense of, you know.
No, but that's a good transition, because Michigan does get back Blankenberg and Summers, who Blankenberg, I think, was pretty solid. He had, not saying he didn't have his giveaways or anything, but he matured pretty well throughout the course of the year, ended up with 13 points. And even Summers kind of quietly got his 11 points. Mm-hmm. And both of these guys were essentially playing, you know, back end minutes. And they still contributed, and they still made enough positive plays that you think, if the coaching is there and the maturity continues in the right direction, they can get better and become, you know, top four defensemen.
My concern, and this is always going to be a concern when you bring in older players, when you go age versus ability or raw talent,
sure,
is as you move up lineup, like, is the growth going to completely be there? So where's the ceiling? So we saw a little bit in the Minnesota series, in the playoff series, where Blankenberg played up lineup a little bit and really struggled with foot speed and making turns defensively. Like, he's always going to be a little bit smooth with the puck. So I have those concerns when he's out there facing faster and more experienced players.
Sure.
I mean, against Windsor, I don't know why they even schedule. Like, schedule a team that's actually going to make you sweat. Like, they might as well have just had a Maize and Blue game. Like, honestly, just have an open scrimmage.
Everybody gets more ice time.
Ciccolini's going to play, right?
Yeah.
So it's I think it's going to be something we're going to have to keep an eye on. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to go. Keaton Pearson is the other freshman.
Right.
He's a 21-year-old freshman.
Okay.
Turns 21 in a couple months. This is age 21 season.
He's a bigger guy.
6'2".
Almost 200.
Yeah, he does look big out there. Mm-hmm. We're gonna see how he's going to match up, you know, against big lineups, you know, real collegiate-level hockey players. And I think there's going to be a little bit of growth opportunity. I don't think the pairs are going to be settled for a while. I mean, we even saw it in that game.
I would guess that York and Martin would probably be out front for the most part. Would you not think so? I mean, those are probably... York probably has the highest ceiling,
right,
and Martin has probably the most talent and experience combined.
I think it's a matter of trying to shore up that second pair. So if
that's
you're going to put them up together...
Then
you're
who's going to anchor?
Night, you got to get 30 minutes from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right? So
no, you're right.
You have to have basically three defensemen that can really roll. And honestly, when you're only playing 2 days a week, you really only need three. No, so let's be honest.
Like, I know what you're saying.
Right? I mean, the Blackhawks won a freaking Stanley Cup with four. So I mean, you can get away with three. And if the fourth is complimentary, they're going to have to find that, though. I mean, they're going to play three pairs, but really they've got to find the top two pairs to lean on.
And then they also get back Griffin Luce, who's also a senior, has 10 points in 3 years. He's a bigger guy. I wouldn't say he's the most fleet of foot or the best puck mover,
right,
but he probably has as much experience as anybody. He's played close to as many games as anybody on the ice, and if nothing else, should hopefully be in the right place.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. We're hoping not to take a lot of penalties either.
Which happens when you can't keep up all the time.
Yes, and we might see that the defensemen as they move up lineup. So,
yeah.
Those are my concerns. Like I said, it might be a little bit of a work in progress. And, you know, thankfully, they have experience coming back in goal. So there is a little bit, hopefully, to lean on. I know there was a lot of criticism about the goaltending performance last year, but everyone's a year older. Hopefully a little bit a year better. Strauss Mann returns as a sophomore. Hayden Levine returns as a senior. Mann started the game, so I don't know if they fancy him as the starter.
We'll see
on Friday.
At the end of the year last year, it pretty much came down to Mann.
He's obviously got the higher ceiling, so we'll see.
And when he played in that Wisconsin series, I thought that he played pretty well.
Definitely.
Goals went in the net.
Yeah.
But when you looked at the cause of where the shots came from and what needed to happen in context.
Right.
Could he have made some of those saves? I mean, sure.
Right.
But to a certain extent, you have to put your goalie in a position to succeed. Mm-hmm. Like, could Tom Brady make throws with guys in his face? Yeah, but you want to protect him. And so, and it's the same concept, is you want your defense to do what they're supposed to do. And when they don't, problems happen there as well. And I thought that towards like the very end of the year, there were a few positives that Mann took away. Mm-hmm. And he's, like you said, he's younger. His ceiling is probably a little higher. Mm-hmm. And honestly, having a senior goaltender as a backup who has played in the Frozen Four is not the worst thing either.
Right. And I think the biggest thing is they're going to have to pick a goalie, you know, or at least have a reliable rotation. Like, understand what they're doing, what their goaltending situation is. And I don't think they completely knew that last year.
I think the hope is
they didn't
know
it the year before either. So
no, Levine won that job over LaFontaine in the second half on their Frozen Four run.
Right.
And then it looked like Mann had won it a time or two last year. Levine won it a time or two. And then at the end, it looked like that's it for Levine and we need to go with Mann. And Levine can come in when necessary, but this is Mann's net. And I would guess that that's where we would start this year. Obviously, anything can happen.
We'll see.
But you're right. We'll see. I would hope that that's where we're going to go because that would potentially give Michigan the highest ceiling heading into the year, at least in net.
Yes. And I think what's going to give them an even higher ceiling is cutting down on turnovers, cutting down on giving the other team good chances from nothing.
Yeah.
And I think there was a little bit too much of that last year. I think it's actually a programmatic problem. I mean, there was a little bit too much of that at the end of the Red era. We haven't seen too much of a change.
I mean, that's what started you and I getting involved in all this, is starting to track some of the analytics, starting to track some of like the Corsi and checking into breakdowns on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, I mean, that hasn't been a solitary issue and on one team or another, it's been sort of a downward trend. You could even argue since the end of the Hunwick era.
Well, you can go 60-40 on Corsi and, 20-80 on turnover chances and you're going to lose. And unless you want, in the hot take section, blaming the goalies is, you can get away with it if you have a really high end goalie and, maybe a drafted goalie.
An Al Montoya
or even someone with a higher ceiling that develops.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that player, you're going to have to protect the goalie a little bit. You're going to have to not sell the goalie out. And, that's the decision. That's the situation I have.
Well,
they're not going to have, these guys aren't going to stand on their heads. That doesn't mean they're bad college goalies. They're not going to steal a ton of games. If structure a team around that.
Well, let's take a little break and we'll come back and we'll talk about a couple hot takes. We'll talk about the schedule, which we both find very interesting for this year, and also maybe take a quick glance around the Big Ten.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back. 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 Guess who's back.
I created a monster. So when the Big Ten hockey schedule comes out, or I should say Michigan's hockey schedule comes out, the first thing I always look for is, how do you match up with football? Because when you work at MGO Blog, that's the money driver, and that's what your responsibilities are. And so when we are needing to be involved in this stuff, because we do hockey, we have to look at, okay, how can we balance this? Is there going to be time? So you're always trying to match up. You put the football schedule on one screen, you put your hockey schedule on the other one, you think, okay, where's the crossover here? And I would say that this year's schedule is about as good as I've seen with the half and half Big Ten season in the first half and the second half. This is as good as I've seen the breakdown be.
Yeah, I don't even think they have any home games after a home hockey game. Is that true?
That is certainly possible. I know they have...
It's really good.
They don't play on a lot of football Saturdays,
right?
Home football Saturdays, other than, of course, well, actually, that's not even true. Yeah, they don't even play. Yeah, so there's no even carryover, which is, that's almost
unprecedented. I can't remember the last time that happened, even in CCHA days, which is really nice. They have the Thursday game against Michigan State instead of having to play on that Friday, before the Michigan State game.
Right.
So you get the home game, not having to cram Friday, Saturday.
They have Western in a few weeks where their home and home is on, they have the home Friday game.
They're on the road the night of the Ohio State game.
They have a home series on the bye week.
Yes, which is nice.
So this is like, we've talked about how we wish the season would start later and they would bump a lot of Big Ten games to the second half of the season because that's when you can focus on those more. That hasn't happened. Okay,
It's probably not going to happen.
Probably not going to, but given how the schedule is this year, or given how the Big Ten makes their hockey schedules, this is about as good as we've seen.
Absolutely.
The other thing is the non-conference teams are all mostly interesting, where we open right away with what you said, top five in pairwise last year team.
They were fifth, Clarkson.
And Clarkson's always good. They're always one of those teams in the Northeast that is always in the tournament, usually fighting for a two seed, sometimes slip to a three seed, but they're all usually winning or near the top of their division and play good hockey.
They brought back, I think, everybody except for their best player who signed with the Wild and their goalie who signed with the Canucks.
Well,
so if they can get any kind of goaltending, it will be a really good challenge this weekend. And I think they have a transfer goalie coming in. They should be in pretty good shape. It should be a really stiff challenge for the weekend.
They also,
I think their 11th rating is a little bit low considering where they finished last year.
Okay.
And what they lost. Like, I don't know who rates college hockey teams.
I don't.
Certainly probably not people that watch a whole lot, but
can you watch a lot of college hockey?
No,
let's not get into that.
For the
so next
podcast.
Week then they get Lake State at home, which also was a top 30 team, top 25 team actually.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, an old CCHA foe that, you know, MGoBlog has always been supportive of playing teams in state. Maybe not exclusively, but it's nice to see some of these teams come back and at Yost that we used to see year in and year out.
Yeah, it's a team they should beat, but will probably win a lot of their other games, so it won't hurt your, it's not going to hurt your pairwise.
It's a chance to gain pairwise.
Team coming in, right. And then the week after that, they have Western, which is nice because the Saturday night when Michigan is playing Notre Dame, they will be on the road, and then they get the home game on that Friday. So,
perfect.
Yeah, great schedule.
And Western, not
Western's got a pulse.
Right.
They have some decent players. Andy Murray's been there forever. They've even been to the tournament. You know, they're a solid squad. When they start Big Ten play, it goes Ohio State, Minnesota, Michigan State, and then they have an off week against New Hampshire,
which is
on the road.
Not one of the high-end Hockey East teams, but still Michigan has played them a few times. Mm-hmm. They're not...
They went there a few years ago.
Yeah, and they've come here, I believe, too. I always personally enjoy it when Michigan plays Hockey East teams. I think the Hockey East dynamic has always been very interesting, and when you can play sort of those teams, or it's different than playing, you know, basketball's going to play other schools. A lot of these schools don't have... You know, that's their main thing,
right,
is hockey.
Right.
So getting
it'll
involved in that
trip.
Is...
It'll be a good trip.
Yeah, I think
now,
so.
Now, the only thing that kind of bums me out is they play Wisconsin early in the season. And you do miss one Big Ten team on the first half.
Okay.
You know, every year. They don't miss Wisconsin. It's going to be Thanksgiving weekend, a Saturday, Sunday. The reason is, and we'll get into this preview in a little bit, but Wisconsin is, to me, a dark horse national title contender.
They're I remember saying that.
They're adding three first-round picks this year. They have Keandre Miller coming back.
Right.
And so they have four of the 12 first-round picks in the NCAA.
If you thought Michigan had a lot,
and this
Wisconsin has even more.
Well, and this is Granato's fourth year. I mean, this is the year they should really take off. They weren't too much better than Michigan in pairwise last year.
Yeah.
But they are, I mean, with Cole Caulfield and Alex Turcotte and Keandre Miller.
There's a lot of star power.
They still have Emberson. Like, they are loaded. And if they, early in the season with all the young players, I think of the way Duluth was a few years ago, where they didn't really catch their stride until the second half. I think it's going to be a little bit rocky for them early on. So, I said earlier it's bad that they caught them in the first half, but it is kind of good. I wish it was a little bit earlier. I misspoke, but yeah, it's nice they do catch Wisconsin in the first half because I'm not going to want them in the second half.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. They start with Ohio State, who is kind of just Ohio State now. Like,
it's a program,
right?
Yeah.
And they don't have a lot of high end scorers. They don't have a lot of drafted kids, but they play pretty well in defense. They've turned out better goalies in the last few years, and it's kind of the team that you have to go and beat. And if you bring your A game and you play well, you can beat them. But if you make mistakes and you get on the penalty kill too often, they can certainly beat you, as we found out the last couple of years.
Yeah, they're going to be great still. They're not losing a ton, and they're, you know, I think they're picked second or third in the conference.
Yep.
So it's going to be a challenge. They do get a very young Minnesota team early on, second Big Ten series
on the bye week.
Yes.
That we're just going to keep mentioning because it's so great.
Right. And that's going to be I think that's a very positive thing for Michigan, having a really young team come in. They played Michigan. They came in here first half last year, and Michigan, I think, drilled them. You know, they couldn't even get out of the zone for a minute because it was Motzko's first year. I think that's a good break to have them so early because they're very young. Now, Motzko's doing a great job, you know, already there, but I still think they're a year or two away. Then they have Michigan State the week after that.
And who lost?
Only Hirose. They still have the other two players off that top line.
Yeah.
They did bring
the
in
KL.
Josh, yeah, the KL line. They did bring in Josh Noldler. I think the rest of the Big Ten got very lucky that Igor Ifantiev decided not to go to Michigan State. I was looking it up. That would have been their best recruit in a decade, I think. He ended up signing with
Is that even saying anything? But
I mean, it is.
No, I know. I understand.
I think that Danton Cole is turning that program around.
Well,
they finished 4 points behind Michigan.
Yeah.
And four spots behind Michigan in the, in pairwise. So it's not like they're some bottom dweller. Right?
No.
Like 30th.
Before he got there, they were sub 50.
Yes.
And Michigan, even despite having some down years, was still running them off the ice.
Yep.
And now that he has worked them up the last couple of years into being in contention, not really to compete in the Big Ten, but to get out of the cellar, right, and you're starting to, they're in the top half of college hockey, mm-hmm, and they're probably not a tournament team.
No.
But they're not a team that you think you're going to take four from every
They've
year.
They've got such a low percentage of goals from outside that top line. They're going to have to solve that. But they are going to have great goaltending, most likely. And that top line's still going to probably be really good. And Nodler, I think, is a little bit underrated from what I've seen when I've watched them. So it's a program on the rise. It's honestly kind of nice to have Michigan State not be horrible. We've talked about how annoying it's been in the past.
Yeah.
So even if it means not drilling them all the time, at least it's interesting. Well, and there's a rivalry because, honestly, like growing up and up until probably like 5 or 6 years ago, State was Michigan's biggest rival.
Oh, yeah.
In the sport. And it's not like that anymore. It's Notre Dame or Ohio State or
Minnesota. It's right. Anyone.
Yeah. It's kind of
and
lost.
It's been
it's
a
lost
while.
Its luster. Yeah.
Since so that has happened.
Them being relevant is good. Penn State is the conference favorite. That is the first week in December.
Oh, that's so weird, isn't it?
Well, they haven't really lost anyone. They were able to retain Evan Barrett, and they're going to be really, really good.
They're just college hockey Oklahoma, where you see that they're really good on offense, and maybe they've improved some things. I just haven't seen it under Godowski, where their defense and their goaltending can be consistent enough to beat teams that they should beat. I mean, I remember last year they'd play teams like Wisconsin in it, and they would blow them out 7-1, or Minnesota,
right,
and the next game they'd lose 3-2. And you just have there's so much inconsistency that I've seen. I'm not saying that there isn't talent and that they don't play a fun brand of hockey. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you want to get to that level of where you're winning conferences and getting sort of home seeds in the tournament or whatever, not that there are even home seeds in the tournament,
right,
but you have to kind of squelch those bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they're inconsistent at that.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to be inconsistent anymore.
You think they've turned that corner?
They've got 11 of their 12 forwards are coming back. And it's a team that shoots all the time.
Sure.
And
But where the question is in offense.
It might be to the point where it doesn't matter.
So they're just gonna like be Man City and score 8 or 9 goals a game?
I think the way college hockey is now, to have a team that's they're gonna be so far out that side of the norm, I don't think it'll matter too much. I mean, if you think about the way Michigan was the Connor year, where right, like, because it was an amazing offensive team that kind of wasn't good at anything else, right?
No,
I mean,
no, you're right.
And I think Penn State's going to kind of drift into that territory. When you're shooting that often, and then you have NHL level shooters at a few of those spots,
you're right.
Right. So it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different than dominating Corsi like we saw last year, where the shots are coming from the corner of the point and hitting the goalie in the chest. And even what we saw on Sunday, where you're hitting the goalie in the chest. Evan Barrett's not going to hit the goalie in the chest.
No.
Tolvide is not going to hit the goalie in the chest. Like, they're going to be deadly. And they do have a transfer defenseman coming in from Minnesota.
Oh.
I think if they can get any kind of goaltending, it's going to be a high-scoring team. It's going to be better than last year. They missed the tournament by one spot. I don't think they're going to miss the tournament again. I do think they're going to win the conference.
Well, and they did that 2 years ago, where they made the tournament and just ran someone out of the building.
Right.
And it was a lower ranked team, I think, but then they faced, I was like Denver or somebody, and then lost.
Yes, they got
so,
it. It's pretty embarrassing, I believe.
Outclassed, yeah. So this could be their turning year. I just, we've kind of heard that a little bit in the past, and I'm not saying it won't be. I'm just kind of like, I'd like to see them play a little bit. And speaking of that, Michigan will see them in early December, just as football season is coming to a close, come to Yost and see maybe the fireworks show of Penn State.
And with that being the end of the first half, as we know it, well, except for the Great Lakes Invitational, which is Monday and Tuesday this year, but actually on New Year's Eve. Was it New Year's Eve last year? It was, wasn't it?
It was around that time.
It was New Year's Eve. Yeah. And so same thing again, Monday, 4 o'clock against Penn State, Tuesday, either 11:30 a.m.
Fair State. You said Penn State. They do not play Penn State 3 times. They play the Fair State Bulldogs.
And then Michigan State or Michigan Tech.
Yep.
In the semifinals.
In a non-conference game.
Coming after the break, they have at Notre Dame, which we haven't talked about Notre Dame yet. They're going to be excellent as well. They got the goaltender back. They have their best forward back. They had a couple young players on the World Junior Summer Showcase that were excellent. This might be a better offensive team than we're used to seeing from Jeff Jackson.
Can Jeff Jackson have good offensive teams?
If he's going to, it's going to be this year.
Okay.
They might choke the life out of the game, but they might be able to score a little bit more. So that'll be very interesting to see. But I do think Penn State and Notre Dame are going to be the class of the Big Ten
Yep.
And then, you know, they have
Ohio State, probably.
Penn State again, Ohio State, Wisconsin State, Notre Dame again, and then Minnesota. So they close at Minnesota, which isn't really that great because that's going to be a young team rounding in the
Although
form.
Although the last couple of years, they've played well there. And mm-hmm. Michigan has traditionally not played well in Minnesota. Right. But in the last few years, of course, that corresponds with Minnesota's downturn. But they have won some games there, and they won one, played the next game, and could have, should have almost, had they had any semblance of a 5-on-3 power play, they would have swept that series. So they have played well in Minnesota. Not dominatingly well, but good enough that it's not sort of the house of horrors that probably we grew up with.
Probably should have won both games in that series.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, yeah. So it's not maybe a great series, or it's not a great schedule in terms of, like, do you have a lot of games in the second half of the year?
I think
which is
just,
so hard to do in this setup, but you know they do the football season works out pretty well. They don't get a ton of early season games. Mm-hmm. It's just that you're going to be gone from Yost from basically the early December until essentially the beginning of February.
This is the third year in a row since we really started since we noticed this, where after the first week in December, which is the end of the Big Ten schedule before the break. They have three series at home for the rest of the season. So,
and that's just the way that
like
it is now.
It's like 80 days. So they're going to play six home games in 80 days. That is a very broken thing about college hockey.
Yeah.
The playoff system is also very broken. So if you're very good, you get a bye. You end up playing, I think, like four games in a month before the national tournament.
Before the tournament. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, hockey is built off of drama and anticipation of a playoff, like long series, and college hockey is kind of the complete opposite of that. And when you roll those two things together, like it's really hard to enjoy a real flow in the second half. But I think that's just kind of what they've got with the Big Ten.
Yep. You know? And that's, you know, you could fix the schedule. You could, I mean, I write about this every single year. Mm-hmm. You could bump the season to start. You could bump the season end into May or, you know, even April after, you know, all the basketball stuff is over and get your own stuff. They don't want to do that, which, you know, that's a completely, we could have what a series of podcasts on that stuff, but that is the schedule. That is the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Now you've wanted to address a few, hot takes that kind of float around from time to
time.
Well,
I love the sauce.
Did you, have you subscribed and ordered some of this sauce?
No, because I have so much. This is not anything against sponsor, but, my mother buys me hot sauce.
Your mother buys you hot sauce?
All the time.
This sounds like a hot take.
No, it's serious. So my wife and I actually, I hope my mom doesn't listen to this, but like my wife and I have to throw out, we have so much hot sauce. I don't even eat a lot
of hot
sauce.
How does that happen?
Delicious hot sauce I will eat. I don't know. And so
how do you get so much? Where does this come from?
No, I haven't bought it. I'm sorry.
This is interesting.
Blame my mother.
You went on a rogue segment about the Vegas Golden Knights. We might have to have an Anthony's hot sauce hot take.
I can bring them all in, but then it would kind of not go. It would go against, you know, because apparently the sauce is very good.
Okay.
I just haven't had a chance to try it.
You don't just bathe in it.
I do want to quell a couple of the theories that have been going around.
Let's start with the goalies.
I don't like blaming the goalies when you really really watch the games and when you really dig into it.
Let's put the cards on the table. You are a goalie.
Yeah.
You
You've
played goalie most of your life.
Yes.
So, but on top of that, this is not coming from a defend your position because I'm a goalie.
No. I mean, I'm the first person to say when the goalies are not good enough.
You are. Yeah, I've sat with you at hockey games. Uh-huh. I've sat with you in the press box. Uh-huh. We've done podcasts. I've sat on that swivel chair in your basement for forever watching hockey games. You will be honest when you're like, that goalie did the right thing there, or he did the wrong thing, and that needs to be better.
I think
so. It is not just defending the goalie.
I think what I touched on earlier is, look, these guys aren't going to play in the NHL. Yeah. Right, but they're not bad goalies. They're not going to blow a bunch of games. Michigan has had some bad goaltending.
Yes.
And I don't think that these guys are bad. I think that goalies, you know, have to play within a certain structure. So you have to sometimes build your structure around a goalie. When the Maple Leafs were looking for a goaltender, they looked at Mike Babcock's system and figured out that the goalie that was available that was best against shots within Babcock's system was Freddie Anderson. And Freddie Anderson was not really great for the Ducks, and he's been one of the most consistent and productive starters since he signed with the Maple Leafs. And I think when you think of it like that, how are you allowing your shots? Where are your shots coming from? Can your goalies handle it? You are the hands you're dealt, in, so to speak, in college hockey. You can't just make a trade. This isn't juniors or the pros. And it's really hard to acquire goalies in college as well because, you know, they're just, I mean, the lead time on Pertillo, for example, is 2.5 years, right?
Sure.
You can maybe get the hot USHL goalie coming in, but I mean, that's not a sure thing.
It's not a sure thing, yeah.
So this is what they have. You know, they don't have a high-end drafted goalie. They will next year. You have to not allow a ton of great chances. The goalie might not bail you out a ton. The goalie might be able to stop a ton of low danger chances. You have to just kind of work around those things. And so,
well, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to state from Michigan's perspective, do you remember when Brian Hogan got hurt in 2010 and the only guy left that they could bring in was Sean Hunwick?
Right, and Hunwick was...
And they completely changed their defensive philosophy, and you had forwards coming back and playing defense, clearing pucks out of slots, getting in front of shots, blocking shots. They didn't have the explosive offense that they had previous to that, but they kept pucks out of the net.
Right.
They started from what their goalie gave them and built forward and had a solid defensive unit then. And that's kind of what we're talking about in this situation.
Yes.
Is it doesn't need to be a turtle shell where we don't go anywhere on offense. It just means that we need to curtail the defensive system to what the goalie is capable of doing.
Yeah, I think that's number one. And, you know, honestly, they're pretty decent at in-zone defense for the most part. The biggest worry to me is turnovers and being able to handle pressure. So losing the three defensemen, two of which were pretty good at breaking the puck out, Boca and Hughes. Hughes was as good as they'll ever have.
Yeah, he's an anomaly.
There'll never be another.
No, he's an anomaly.
Right. So how are you dealing with that? And are teams going to forecheck them? What are they going to do? And I think Michigan's got to figure that out. Or, you know, honestly, there's going to be a lot of hot takes blaming the goalies because the goalies aren't going to stand on their head and save all these grade A chances every night. They will every now and then, but it's not going to be a regular thing.
But to expect Michigan's it is going, just...
Yes, Michigan. To expect it is, it's not just a Michigan thing.
It's short-sighted.
It's common within the sport, though.
No, believe it. I mean, you can get on hockey Twitter in the playoffs and...
Right. And the second thing would be is thinking that Quinn Hughes leaving is any kind of a good thing in the sense where... he is such an anomaly. He played outside the system a little bit, and he did create there was a lot of turnovers on his part because, you know, he's being asked to do a lot. And when you have a defenseman carrying the puck all the time like that and handling the puck in danger areas not being offensive danger areas being if you turn it over, it's going to be a scoring chance for the other team. You are going to have more than normal chances against in that sense. You see it all the time. You see it with Erik Karlsson. You know, on the Senators, he got a lot of criticism. He gets criticism sometimes for the Sharks. I see it a lot of time in juniors because it's a little bit more prevalent there. And it's a thing where I don't think the way that people perceive the sport and watch the sport have caught up with the positionless concept of a really puck-moving and roving defenseman. And the second point is you know, it might be a sense where they struggle to adjust their system a little bit to Hughes last year.
And well, they had to change it the last couple of years.
They talked about that.
Yep.
So maybe York playing within a different structure is going to help, but at the same time, you're losing so much of that offensive creativity. That's going to be a thing where even if they are a little bit more productive, it's not because Quinn Hughes is gone, right?
Like, right.
I think it's because they struggled to integrate him as well as they needed to in that sense.
Well, and sometimes when you have a superstar like that, it takes intelligence to play with him because
it's just such a sea change.
Right.
You know? And like I said, it's not the way people grow up playing. It's not the way, and it's just so hard and teams key on that, you know? And so I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a little bit different, but
it's going to be a little bit more normal hockey,
right?
Where it's not give the ball to LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's going to look a little bit different, but I think they are going to suffer in a lot of areas that people don't quite notice apparently. You know, where Quinn Hughes made it so natural to get the puck out of the zone and get the puck in the zone. Even if there's not turnovers at center ice, you know, they're going to be losing a lot of the really nice stuff that he did between basically their faceoff dots and the opponent's blue line.
And I think what needs to happen is there needs to not be, it's going to happen because people are clowns from time to time, but the York to Hughes comparisons are just not on the table. He is a good player.
Right.
He's just a different kind of player.
Right.
And to expect him to step in and be like, well, he's not Quinn Hughes, it's kind of like saying, well, okay, but the next shooting guard for the Bulls isn't Michael Jordan. Right. Well, okay.
Quinn Hughes was either the highest or second highest defenseman picked in a very defense-heavy draft.
Right.
On a redraft, he probably goes even higher. He went seventh. I think he's probably goes even higher.
Top four, maybe.
100% wouldn't have slipped past the wings. You know what I mean? Like, probably goes three or four. Cam works a little bit different. You know, it's not in honestly, it's a detriment to expect Cam York to step in for Quinn Hughes because it puts too much pressure on him.
Sure.
As we talked about earlier, like, you really got to give any freshman who's not, like, an elite superstar talent, like, you know, top 10-ish, there's a drop-off between 10 and 15. You should expect York maybe take until Christmas to take off before he becomes a player.
And we saw it with, like you said, with Keandre Miller.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so I think we're going to have to be comfortable with that. York is going to do very, very well offensively, probably very well defensively before he leaves. But like I said, it's not going to happen day one.
No. And then the next thing is just kind of like Michigan could get better on the offensive end if their forwards stop turning the puck over as much.
I think, well, yes and no. I mean, I think that might be a systemic thing. They're going to have to look at the way teams are pressuring them. I think that because that this is the third year, people know the way Michigan's going to play.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to maybe switch it up a little bit. I think that the big gains we talked about earlier, I thought were going to come from creating a new line out of the incoming players. It doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Probably
I think
there's
going to be like fills. And that to me is a little bit
to be concerning. Honest, though, if you get a full year of Beecher, because remember, they only got a half year of Norris last year, and they weren't terrible, and he was, you could see the difference in Norris last year than what he was in his freshman year. And then he was out and gone, and I didn't get to see that finished product. So if you get a full year of Beecher like that.
I think the full year of Beecher is going to look like a Norris freshman year, if it does.
Okay.
Not a Norris sophomore year.
That's probably true.
Also, if you look at the comps and the cohorts, Beecher was picked really high for where he probably should have gone.
So he may be overdrafted.
There's two sides to the opinion. He's got an NHL body. He's got NHL skating for that body. Does not have NHL production from that position.
Okay.
And so I think because he has an NHL body and NHL skating for that body, he's going to be very effective right away. But to expect him to put up like point per game, or especially if he's not playing with Lockwood and
well, we're hoping that maybe that
if he starts on that third line, it's probably not going to be a point per game situation.
No,
but he's going to be effective right away. And you know, I think that there is some gains to be made, like you said, not turning the puck over so much. I do think that if the offense is going to get better as a team, the forwards collectively, they're going to have to take better care of the puck. Maybe they'll get some better bounces this year. I would expect the Corsi to be pretty similar, the shot differential. I'm not expecting the high danger to be that much different, especially after what I saw against Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not expecting a lot of corner picking, a lot of sniping.
Well, you have to have guys that do that, and they didn't bring in guys that did that. They have a couple on the team that are good, but not at that level.
Right.
So given all these things, we've talked about the schedule, we've talked about the teams in the Big Ten, we've talked about non-conference. Mm-hmm. Well, now we've talked about some of the hot takes in the roster. What do you think?
So last year they were under 500. They were 13, 16, and 7 overall. They won 7 out of their 16 home games. They had 5 ties. Remember that streak?
Oh, my gosh.
They ended the season 1-5-1, and they were 28th pairwise. Our prediction last year was between 15 and 20, I thought mine was.
Yeah, we were about fringe tournament.
I am going to go with that again. I think because the Big Ten was really muddled. So that's the negative take, right? No, honestly, that's
right.
The positive take was they were 4 points out of second place in the Big Ten.
Yeah, if they sweep that Wisconsin series, which both those games are winnable,
they probably finished second in the Big Ten and still being like 25th in pairwise, which would have been really weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think that my prediction would be about the same as last year. 15 to 20 is where I think they'll end up if I had to bet money. I think their ceiling is probably a low-end second seed or a high-end 3 seed. I think the low end is probably about the same as where they are now.
Yeah.
I think if they fail, it's going to be the similar reasons we're just talking about. Too many turnovers, too many not protecting the goalies enough.
And just not impactful at all on special teams.
Yes, we did talk. We didn't talk about Chris Mayotte, the new assistant.
Okay.
Really well known for penalty killing, really well known for goalie development.
Well,
and those are two
areas. Both of those.
Right. So maybe the, and honestly, if they're going to run a York, Beecher, Lockwood, Slaker power play, there could be gains. So I think that's where you would touch your highest potential, touch your ceiling. It's not a for sure thing, but that's the path I would see. And like I said, if they're going to hit their floor, which is probably low to mid 30s, like they were 28th, I think they, you know,
they could drop a little, but not too much.
They go to 35,
yeah,
right? That would be like everything going wrong.
Injuries.
Kind of like last year, but worse.
Yeah.
And I think that without a system change, that that's still on the table, right? I think that if teams are forechecking them out of the building,
and they can't, and they don't have someone to get the puck out,
that's what we were saying when I was sitting there with my friends on Sunday. This team is going to be able to be forechecked, and if they don't have a solution for that, we'll probably see some of that. So I think that that's how you hit your floor.
So you think bottom end of the top half in college hockey?
No, I mean, I'm still thinking 15 to 20, which would be bottom end of the power.
Okay.
You know, or,
so you think they'll be in the, they'll be in the race for a, like four seed,
a mid tier power team. Yeah.
Okay.
And,
and in the Big Ten,
I mean, predicted sixth.
They are.
Minnesota being above them is a little peculiar because of how young Minnesota is going to be. I could see them passing Minnesota. I could see them passing Ohio State if everything shakes out right. Ohio State's a little bit of an unknown in that sense. I mean, they're a very consistent program right now, but I think they have the ability to be passed. I don't see them passing Penn State, Notre Dame, or Wisconsin.
The Wisconsin is interesting just because of they do have that high end talent, but they had some bad goaltending last year. Their defense was suspect, and they just made a lot of like silly gaffes that Michigan took advantage of in some of those games. So, like, we thought Granato was a good hire. He's gotten a lot of high end guys, but he hasn't done anything with them yet.
No, and it's not really filled out though. But this is a really special class, and if they fail, it's going to be a huge red flag. Like, I think this is like.
So what is a success for Wisconsin?
I hate comparing tournament success because it's just thrown
into
a blender.
But they have to make the tournament.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you would, success and for Wisconsin
is like a two seed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say. Yeah.
Okay.
I would expect Wisconsin to be a two or three seed.
I would say that Michigan's ceiling is probably third in the Big Ten. And probably, I don't know that they fall below Michigan State, but I mean, they're predicted sixth. I wasn't outraged by that. I thought maybe fourth or fifth is what the goal would be. So, so that's a lot. Clarkson is in, while we're recording this on a Wednesday, it's in 2 days, a good measuring stick to start. I think they start with their first five games at home. I would hope that they could go 4-1. That's probably asking a lot, but, I think that a split with Clarkson is not a disappointment.
No, not at this stage.
So should be a good time. We will be back at some point. Hopefully I can convince you to come back and do this. Thank you very much for doing this. Your insights on Twitter, on the blog have always been well appreciated. People come up to me and tell me that they're glad you're around. Well, I'll try to
tell those people. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on to doing this. Part of the reason I did it last year is I wanted to do this with you because we're friends. Brian gives us a great platform, a lot of autonomy. Thank you to him. And it's fun. And, you know, I just have other commitments where I can't do it on the regular. But I will be back when I can. And hopefully with good news, I do. Like I said, I feel like it's going to be a fun season.
Yeah, and there definitely should be some excitement in the Big Ten hockey, even if it's not just in at Yost.
One of the other things we were saying, and I'll kind of close with this, is for a while, the coaching the Big Ten was dismal, right? And it was kind of miserable. It was a bad conference. With Michigan being picked sixth, I don't think it's really a negative on their program. It's we wanted great coaching in the conference, and we got it. And this is kind of the byproduct.
And you've seen how the bottom end of the Big Ten is like middle of college hockey to pushing the tournament.
It's a power conference.
So now it's up to Michigan to keep with the programs and start pushing their talent and their production up to the higher level that we were used to.
Yep.
This has been MGO HockeyCast 2.1. My name is Anthony Ciotti. With me was David Nastranak. If you need me, I'll be waiting for David in one of these 13 conference rooms at the Residence Inn.